Mark.
Hey, me too. It's nice to talk to you as always.
Same here. So you may reject this, but I think you're indulging me. I asked for an emergency podcast because I like asking for emergency podcasts. And this time I'm hoping that we can talk about this thing, this decision that we have both been getting a bunch of emails and press calls telling us that it is an emergency. So
It's a very big deal.
usually when we have emergencies, we just make up that it's an emergency because we want to just have a fun chat. But this time, others are telling us. So can you just set out the basics? Because even though this is a topic we've written about, it's really you're the one who knows it, and I'm the one who asks the stupid questions, so we'll play those roles today. But if you could set out what happened and whether you really think this is an emergency.
Oh, and this is one where the dynamic is the reverse, right? So everybody else thinks it's an emergency, and you and I think it's not an emergency. But we and that in and of itself is reason for an emergency podcast. It's
Yay!
not the subject matter that's the emergency. It's the need to have a fun conversation about it. And we probably, if we were being really on top of things, we'd have had my colleague John Coyle come join us because he's the real conflicts guru. But we want to talk about that decision by the New York Court of Appeals, right? Saying, depending on who you talk to, saying nothing much, or the end of the world for New York law governed debt because the bonds at issue there, which were these collateralized bonds, the so-called PDVSA 2020s. And PDVSA has said, oh, no, the pledge of collateral that was made in connection with those bonds is invalid because you needed to get the approval of the National Assembly to do that, and you didn't get it. So the collateral pledge is invalid. And the New York Court of Appeals said, in a nutshell, look, there's two questions here. One is whether the pledge of collateral made in connection with those bonds was valid. And that question is answered by looking to Venezuelan law, not New York law. And then there's a second question, though, which is that if the collateral pledge was not valid, what's the consequence? Do investors lose the right to enforce their collateral or not? And the consequence, the court said, is governed by New York law. New York law answers that question. And that's where we are now. And I have gotten more people contacting me about this decision than about any of the others, even back in Argentina days when important things actually, or at least weird things actually were happening. So yes, emergency podcast, but maybe not an actual emergency.
Okay, so let me set out what the I can only characterize it as the bedwetting fear is. And it is part one of what you said. So the decision says two things. One, it says the validity of this issuance, and particularly the grant of collateral, that was the basis for the challenge, will be determined as a matter of Venezuelan law. And then it says, the implications will be a matter of New York law, which is the law chosen for the contract. And people are freaking out about this validity being determined by Venezuelan law. And even there's, fancy lawyers who are telling their clients, oh, yeah, this is, we might have to do more diligence before. But is this really any different? My impression was, let's say I bought a bond from Venezuela and I would want to know whether or not that bond was properly authorized by the government. That seems really basic, and I would hire a law firm to give me a legal opinion that the bond was properly authorized. It would have the attorney general signing off on it. It would have a fancy law firm signing off on it. It would have the minister of finance signing. Just all sorts of things would happen to protect me. And so it strikes me as a, I mean, I am really puzzled by why people are saying the court said something radically different here than what you would expect from a second year law student who takes a course in conflict of laws.
Yeah, I mean, I'm confused too. I don't see anything. This is sort of how I would have handled it if I were a judge presiding over the case, and nothing seems especially weird to me about it. And you're right, the you know, investors maybe don't hire their own lawyers. Maybe they should, but they don't. But you know, there's a legal opinion. There's two legal opinions, right? There's one about the validity and enforceability of the loan, or the enforceability under New York law, but there's a legal opinion about the validity of the loan under Venezuelan law. That's there for a reason, right? Because if I'm borrowing, if I'm buying a bond issued by, let's say, a corporation, I mean, I think the questions about whether the proper procedures were followed to make sure the corporation was authorized to issue that bond, those are governed by, I think, the law of the place of incorporation, right? And it's the same basic principle here. The important thing, I think, is that there's nothing incompatible between saying, on the one hand, we look to Venezuelan law to figure out whether this thing was validly issued, and then on the other hand, saying, look, under New York law, it is possible for an invalidly issued security to nevertheless be enforced. And that kind of thing happens all the time in conflicts of law land.
So is this, maybe I'm mixing apples and oranges, but is this sort of like, yeah, so maybe there were some problems with the validity. They'll find out, they'll get, you know, some Venezuelan experts to opine on it, and they'll have conflicting expert opinions. And then the New York court, could they just say, yes, but the investors did enough for this to be an enforceable contract. They did enough due diligence on their part. And it's almost like a question of apparent authority. And that they'd say, yeah, you did enough, and you thought in good faith that this was a properly issued opinion. And that's all we require under New York law.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so first of all, I don't know what the odds are here. I'm not going to handicap them, but it's not obvious to me that the pledge of collateral even was invalid under Venezuelan law, right? I mean, there were, like, sure, the National Assembly was grumbling about it, but like, this would be, so fine, it's an unusual bond. The pledge of collateral is unusual, but it would be the first time in history, so far as I can tell, that legislative approval was required for some securities issuance in this context. So who knows how that's going to come out. But yeah, I think, I mean, I don't understand the law super well here, but I think that even an invalidly issued security, even if the violation is of a constitutional provision, I think if the investor takes, maybe especially on secondary markets, if they take without notice of the violation, then they're fine. And, you know, that all those provisions of the bond documentation that you already talked about, the legal opinions from New York and Venezuelan lawyers, the representations from Venezuelan officials or PDVSA officials, that all of the, you know, authority boxes have been checked and validity boxes have been checked. All those are there precisely to give investors protection so that they can argue. How can you say I had notice of invalidity when you yourself are telling me it's valid, and I got these lawyers saying it's valid, and what, some legislators are being like, oh no, you didn't check with us, and like, that suddenly means I'm supposed to, like, what, not be able to buy the bond? How, like, what am I supposed to do? So anyway, like, all those arguments are still there, and I don't know, maybe the collateral pledge will wind up being totally invalidated. But that seems like not, I wouldn't automatically assume that's the case by
any
means. No,
I would, you are not willing to bet, but I am willing to bet, since I'm investing $0 in this. Yeah. I am willing to bet that this all holds up. That
that would be a weird, the opposite result would be just a surprising as hell thing for a New York court to do.
Right. And not even because the New York court cares about preserving business coming to New York or all of
right.
that. It just seems, you know, I have great sympathy for the Venezuelans, not for the Maduro government, but for the Venezuelan people, and I would like them to have their assets protected. This kind of just seems like this New York Court of Appeals decision is not protecting the assets against claims, not in the way that people were hoping for.
That's right. I think that's right.
So can I ask you, so there's been so much chatter about this. There's been chatter about how, because of this decision, countries will start issuing debt under English law.
Or the law of Texas.
Or the law of Texas, yes. Oh, my goodness. All right. Yes. Yes. Countries will behave like Elon Musk and want to take their toys and go play somewhere else. Now, isn't what happened here somewhat analogous to what happened in the Ukraine-Russia case, where, if memory serves, Ukraine said, look, our Minister of Finance did not properly do this loan to Russia. I mean, the backstory, of course, was that this was during the regime of Viktor Yanukovych, who was under the thumb of Russia, and Russia was like, you will borrow this $3 billion, or that it was total $3 billion, I think, but only partially dispersed, but you will borrow this money from us at this rate and under these contracts. And the Ukrainian puppets say yes. And so then the subsequent government says, no, this is not valid. Like, how could this be a proper loan? And didn't the English court do something essentially the same as what the New York Court of Appeals has done? Although maybe they were more conclusive.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. But so what I do remember is that many of the arguments that Ukraine raised under English conflict of law rules wound up being resolved by English law, like the ostensible authority question. But also, my memory is consistent with yours that the decision's quite clear that some of these types of issues, like whether the person who purports to bind the government has the actual authority to do it, that some of them would be governed by Ukrainian law, notwithstanding the fact that we're talking about an English law bond. And that's exactly the same thing, right? That any conflict of law person knows this. And again, I'm not really a conflict of laws person, but even I know it, that the rules you get are, at the end of the day, picked by the conflicts rules of whatever forum is hearing your lawsuit. And sometimes they're going to point away from the body of law that's actually designated in the contract. And that's just an unavoidable thing. It's just inherent in the nature of the thing. But it doesn't mean that your loan is unenforceable, right? Just like, you know, we'll find out what happens with Ukraine, but the ostensible authority and, you know, other arguments, except for duress, wound up not working in that case.
Thank you. That's very helpful, because there's just been so much ridiculousness in the chatter over it. Although, given that both of us, I suspect you've received these calls too, which like sort of investors saying, can I please hire you and pay you a lot of money? Because we're very worried about this. I mean, I hate having to tell them, you know, really, there's nothing here. So keep your money.
You should never have to say that to an investor.
Really?
It's a missed opportunity.
But Mark, so just to get into the weeds, and I don't understand this, but this seems like this next question that I'm going to raise seems more relevant. So there is some question about what has actually happened here. So in the district court decision, and just to remind everybody in case people don't know, in the district court said, you know, that this validity stuff under Venezuelan law is rubbish. The UCC provision doesn't really apply here. That's about something else. validity and it is all a matter of New York law, and these are valid, fine. And then there is a grant of interest, prejudgment interest, and then it goes up to the Second Circuit on appeal, and the Second Circuit then sends it to the highest court of New York to determine a subset of issues. And now, after the New York Court of Appeal has determined those issues, it's going to wind its way back to the Second Circuit. So what happens is that is the first decision completely knocked out, or do we still have to wait to see what happens? And then there are complicated big words like vacate and stuff like that that are involved here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've gotten this question too, right? And the way it was presented to me is that some of the holders of the PDVSA bonds have been like, well, you know, we're going to win. This is going to go back to the district court and we're going to win again. And then because we're going to get a new judgment, we're going to get to calculate the amount that we're owed by adding prejudgment interest to that new judgment for the whole period of time, including all the time this case was on appeal. And I haven't done the math, but at least one reporter I was talking to gave something like $420 million as the additional amount of prejudgment.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh so much.
Yeah. I'm not 100% confident to the answer. I think if I'll put this as simply as I can, like, I think it's possible that that could happen, but it's definitely not necessary that that's the way things turn out. And I think it's probably wrong to say that that's what should happen. So I think what ought to happen, because as you point out, the district judge, the order that was appealed from did both of those things. It said, here's the amount that bondholders are owed. And then it also said, and I dismiss PDVSA's claim for a judgment that says the collateral pledge is invalid. And only that second part of the district judge's order was appealed. So I think the right thing for the Second Circuit to do is to vacate that judgment, but only in part. Basically, you leave the money judgment part of it intact so that the amount stays fixed and it keeps accruing post-judgment interest. But the district judge just reconsiders the issues related to the pledge of collateral. I think that's the right outcome. I wouldn't say it's like I'm 100% confident that that has to happen, but I think it probably is what will happen and that it is what should happen, if that makes sense. So like, it's a clever argument and maybe there's some non-zero chance it works, but I think in all likelihood, that's not how things turn out.
Yeah, I don't think so. The Second Circuit and the district judge in this case are pretty savvy, and they're not going to let some of these clever arguments hoodwink them.
Right.
At least I just don't see this happening. And to me, the reality is the district court judge had a pretty good basis for their decision, mm-hmm. but the Second Circuit was on pretty solid ground, giving it to the New York Court of Appeals, and the New York Court of Appeals was entirely fair in what it did and drew on ambiguous law. So, like, all of these decisions from sort of the, you know, despite the law professor inclination to criticize everybody else and call them stupid, This is all reasonably, carefully analyzed and sort of just adds a clarity. And so to me, all of the bedwetting over, you know, oh my God, validity now has to be, okay, I can't help but repeat bedwetting, you know, multiple times, but all of the drama about, oh no, we're going to have to learn about the Constitution of Venezuela. Just, this is so silly. And in particular, okay, so that here's the last thing, and maybe this is not valid, but you and I did some research on this. Is something like some significant percentage, it's at least 40 to 50% of sovereign bonds in their governing law provisions, and it, please forgive me if I get the percentage wrong, but it's a substantial percentage. Sovereign bonds will say matters of validity will be determined by the local law of the republic. And in fact, Venezuela's own bonds, their sovereign bonds, say this. And I remember asking people involved in Venezuelan bond issuances, why do the PDVSA bonds not say this and the Venezuelan bonds say this? And I am pretty sure the answer was we copied the template for the PDVSA bonds from some, you know, corporate type bond, Trust Indenture Act type bond, and we copied the template for the Venezuelan bonds from Argentina. And so one had it and one didn't have it. But it didn't actually, I mean, this idea of validity being determined by the local law is so damn standard.
Yeah, and I think if I'm remembering right, some of the bond, the sovereign bonds, just say, you know, it's your standard like New York or English law governing law clause, and then it says, you know, except for matters concerning, you know, authorization and execution, might not use the word validity, but definitely.
Oh yeah, you're right. It's authorization and execution.
And some of them don't even say what those issues are governed by, but the implication, right, is that it's the issuer's own. And then some say, specifically say those issues are governed by the issuers. Those issues are subject to the issuer's own law. And like in the corporate context, it's kind of taken for granted, right? Like that's the rule.
Yes.
And even if your clause says something different, that's the rule you get. And so maybe that's another reason why it's not so odd that they're not, that language is not in the PDVSA bonds, is it's a corporate bond. And like, that's kind of where you look to.
This is, you are exactly right. It's because it's a corporate bond. And in the corporate context, you take this stuff for granted.
Yeah.
It's almost, in the sovereign context, you don't take it for as much for granted, but in the corporate context, you take
it
for granted.
And when you have a state-owned corporation, I think people, maybe there's a little category confusion, right? Because if I'm buying an Apple bond, I'm not normally thinking that like, gee, maybe I need to look to see whether Congress approved the Apple bond. But, you know, with a state-owned corporation, those kind of issues of authorization get a little bit murkier, right? So maybe they should, in a state-owned corporation, maybe they should say something explicit about this. But like, yeah, no one should be surprised, I don't think, by what happened here. And definitely no bed should be wet.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. I'm hoping we have the reason for at least a couple more emergency podcasts. But this one was an emergency that was brought to us that is not an emergency, but other people jumping up and down and trying to give us money, which we don't want.
I mean,
money
dirty
is
money.
Good.
Well, I want you to invite me to your mansion and ply me with good bottles from your wine cellar. Don't sully our relationship by offering money.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Thanks.